Talking Industry, topical debate from the world of engineering, automation, and manufacturing. Brought to you by DFA Media Group. This episode is sponsored by Drives and Controls, the number one event for automation, power transmission, and motion control. Taking place the 5th and the 6th of June 2024 at the NEC Birmingham, in association with Smart Manufacturing and Engineering Week. Register now at www.drives-expo.com.
Absolutely, I agree with you. It's something which already exists in IT world, because the safety in IT world is quite standard. And I agree with you, there is absolutely mess in all the protocols and many more. Considering the company where I'm working at this moment is the converter, the protocol converter heart. They talking about 300 protocols, which if you consider what everything can be, simple generator. Look at the simple generator has a controller. The controller communicating by Profibus or Modbus. It does have a safety IOs, which are communicating maybe on a can open. And it does have an engine communication units with communicating on a CAN bus. And put these all together to got all the necessary information to run the machine or even start the machine, because you, if the generator is gas generator, has to have a physical ability to recognize when it's nobody around the generator, when the gas opening, it has to be safe environment. As you said, nobody can enter it. You have to make sure that you can do it by physical, you can do it by the camera. These days, you do have a camera vision, which can recognize there is a person. If it's frozen or moving, doesn't really matter. There is a person, you cannot start. And you can start the press button, start button many, many times. The system has to be designed correctly from beginning. That's where it's, unfortunately, we can't undo 50 years of development. And don't forget, we're not developing by one team. We don't developing in one country. The globe is so great big when the all different variation will always come. And this is the point where you think how to put all this together. And there are technologies to answer that. There are technologies which will help you. But of course, any technology, and this is the another things to have in mind of design, any technology which you're adding into the daisy chain of the data flow from the physical sensor to the actual decision-making unit or CPU or the decision-maker person which is supposed to decide, it's another weak point in a chain. As more chains you're putting in together, more possible failures you have. And this is another, how you gonna create more safe system? By adding more things in the system? Is a question. I don't think so. In my opinion is you, the system should be, as you said, unified and as simple as possible, because then you can ensure the stability and safety of the system. As soon as you're making it more complex, of course, it does have a benefits, but also has massive negatives. And as we always, starting at these days, talking about convergence of data in IT, what we design on OT layer, it may not have any meanings for these people out there in IT world. And the things that Ian, you mentioned, or no, David was mentioning about remote access. This is another, I call it hornet in a nest of bees, which you literally opening up. And this is the way how you think, how are you going to open that? How are you going to control that? Talking about multiple things, multiple protocols, and creating hub, that's one way how to do it. The hub could be different. It could be set up as a server. It could be set up as a unique data converter unit. But who's supposed to get access to these data? Which controller supposed to, you know, all the machine builders in the past, even me, myself, I said, oh, I need this Ethernet switch. And I put it there because it's got 5 ports. That's what I was interested. And that's what they do now. It's cheap. You can put it there, and the HMI communicating with the controller, communicating with the safety PLC, and you've got data there. And then I, as an engineer, will come there, plug there my computer, and hey, hello, go, have a look. I see all. What if somebody else will come and plug it, his computer in it? And don't need to be even computer. These days, you can go with a tablet and connect to it because it's got Wi-Fi hotspot. And this is the problem. The changing of design is actually on the ground level, on the bottom. If you want to have a safety machine, you have to start with the physical, but also if you're starting into wired systems, you're not gonna put there simple switch, which opening it anybody to connect to it and change the things. One example is I was designing hydro power stations, and the customer was Adam, and I want to have access to this by HMI, and then to HMI he could remotely dial up. I said, that's not a good idea. It's a safety feature. It's a protection. And it was a protection settings. And it's, no, I'm going to disable it when I want. I say, you cannot disable it if you are not there. Mm-hmm. Why not? I said, just don't do it. And he did it. He did it anyway. What happened? He remotely disabled over speed protections on the hydropower plant, which meant, because he wasn't there, he couldn't hear what's happening there when the turbine running on high speed. He started to press start button remotely and blow up whole panel, because suddenly when its system excited, except of having 380 volts, he had 1200 volts. The only things what survived was actually controller, which was designed for the marine environment and was able to survive 1200 volts. And that's the only way how we recorded actually what's happened. And he said, no, Adaman, I can remotely control everything. No, wrong. Only person which is responsible and does have a knowledge can probably access it features, can access it. Even can access the HMI, which is designed to do operations. The other one maybe can decide, have access to the PLC logic. And the other one, to PLCs, safety PLCs. This is somewhere needs to be decided. For this, it's necessary to have the remote access management system, where it can say this person with these capabilities they can access different layers of your system. And this is something which, in many cases, is missing out there, or is not really dig deeper. But it's something what I, in IT perspective, is already working. It's working when, yes, if you do have a corporate laptop, you can work on everything what is installed from your corporate website. But if you want to install something else, you need special access, special password, IT administrator password. The same things we need to have on our OT layer, because then the safety of the system will be fulfilled. Otherwise, if everyone can do everything by just plugging on the unmanaged switch, oh, there is a problem. That's not right way.
I mean, that's amazing, really, that you wouldn't have that as standard, because, yeah, as you say, in IT systems, that's, you know, and even outside manufacturing, you know, we're all used to different levels of privilege for different types of user. You know, I mean, I run a junior cricket coaching business, and, you know, I can access the junior records of my kids, but I can't access the records of the club down the road for obvious reasons. And, you know, it's just simple access provision, isn't it? And
yeah, but it's a historical thing, you know, in OT layer, because it was all disconnected, you didn't really need that. But now when it's coming and getting connected, very good example it's a for life science data recorders. The data recorder designed in 1980s probably had a couple of layers of access. The reason was because regulations was telling them, if you want to approve this change, you need to go and ask somebody who's got the approval rights. But that was already transferring a little bit data in 1980s from OT layer to IT layer and required base of regulations. And Yes, people fighting with regulations because it's adding complexity and adding some bottlenecks. But in some way, they're helping to unify systems. And this is the important part of it. If you're not going to unify systems, you're going to overcomplicate it. And from machine to machine, it's going to be all different. And as it is now, and find the right way around it, it's going to take probably generation. It's not things which we can change. You know, when I started in IoT industry was 10 years ago, and everyone's thinking how big boom it is. Is it? It is a big part, but actually the IoT world, in OT world, it's something which was there in 1960s, 70s, when the first SCADA systems on utilities were existing and were doing exactly the same, which of course, much less data, but they were actually secure because they were physical separated networks and still are. Then again, down to the design, we're going to end it up. And if things are designed well in the beginning, they will work much smoother. But who is arranging the design? That's the questions. If we're going to access it one way here in UK, then there could be somebody else accessing it in EU. They created their own directive. If you're going to go to US, it's completely different story. And if you're going to go to China or Japan, you will be surprised what is possible and not possible there. And, you know, it's a not simple decision making when everything's apply everywhere.
But that business is great.
You know the analogy you gave me with cards, RS-232, RS-485. Sometimes even trying to connect when you have the password is difficult.
Yes, you didn't get the modems
right, you know. But do you think then that the IoT of things is going to change to much more like the current Microsoft-esque and Google multi-layered authentication with mobile phones, that kind of level?
Again, depends where you are. I think US is set up for that. And I like some things what our CEO said and in American company said. Americans need things simple. And if there is a technology which simplifying things for them understanding, like, for example, cloud, yes, that's answer for them. If you're going to talk to Europeans, it's different story. If you're saying Germany or Italy or any other countries in Europe, they are much, much more into engineering, have their own control over the things. And that's why, for example, Amazon or Google or Microsoft can see much lower revenue from European countries to go into their clouds. One thing is possibly trust, but other things is a control. And sorry, I tried to get the data and into IoT platform multiple ways. I started with things like doing it by your own coded software, your own gateway. Then I used to standardize things and use OPC servers and with some additions. And then I have tried also AWS or Azure Edge. Well, I can tell you, when I move away from OT to IT technology more and more, the things went so much complicated, so much problematic. They're saying they are more scalable. But from my point of view, they just creating that chain of the problem technologies, which creating more and more weak points in the chain. Then they on the end did not simplify. Of course, for end user, it's like I always having fight with my wife. I am Android user and she is Apple user, iPhone. And she's saying because she like it, the simplicity. Yes, but I don't have a power over what I can do with it. That is very restricted what I can do it. With Android, I do have more. And it's, again, probably the comparison of the mind. And now generalizing. Of course, not everyone's in US is like that. There is lots of engineering coming and engineering of my own portfolio is coming from US. But in the generalizing, when you're talking about general public, they want things more simple. They want things used.
Peter, I think you've hit it when you mentioned about the iPhone and the Android, that picks up what Ian was talking about earlier on about the standardization of software. Now, I'm not for that. I'm actually against that. I think it stifles innovation. And I think that we need different technology platforms. But everything we've talked about today is around application, because actually there is some great standards, there is some great legislation in place, but people aren't following it. You take cybersecurity standards 62443, the programming standards for PLCs 61131 part 3. There is guidance and knowledge and support out there for people to apply the technology in the right way. In my mind, the issue is that for whatever reason, and I don't know the answers, people aren't applying the technology in the right way. And I think we need to get back to that. Martin Kidman put a little note in the thing about it starts with a risk assessment, and it absolutely does. And within that risk assessment, you know, that isn't just about, oh, can my hand get trapped between this pneumatic cylinder and this end stop? It's around things like remote access, cybersecurity. All of those considerations need to be made in that risk assessment, because they are the risks that we're identifying as part of that whole assembly. And that's the bit that I struggle with. So, Ian, I think it is a really, really valid point. And I think there's a big issue around software and lack of knowledge. And I think that that's where the problem is. And probably the investment needs to be made in the skills shortage. And let's be right, if you go into every technical college in this country, there's very, very few of them that are teaching machinery safety or industrial safety systems and cybersecurity as part of their engineering courses. I know that because we're working with a few of them to try and get information on their curriculum, but it's not an easy task.
Right. Well, that's because if you think about the 70s and 80s, you'd have a guy in a blue coat, and he'd take delivery of his fantastic Swedish machine that would be delivered, and he'd have a cupboard, punch cards. You know, there was no requirement to download drawings to it to do its thing. There was no requirement. He was the guy that was in charge of it. And because that's kind of where the machinery exists from, the IT part of it is like a, for those guys specifically, you know, they're engineers and they're physical engineers. They're not security engineers. They're not software engineers. They like Windows 95. You know, they're kind of boxed into what they're thinking. And although you've got maybe their bosses, and I don't want to be stereotypical, but you've got people that are a bit further up the chain trying to integrate all of that kind of stuff into a corporate area. And, you know, you should imagine the IT guy sitting in the comms room with two cables and going, well, that can't talk to that one. And I want to keep that separate from that one. And nobody needs to get into that one. And where do I put it? Because they're not used to that. Sorry, Andy.
It's part of the problem with standards that standards are not keeping up with the technology, or is that not an issue? You know, you mentioned the fact that people aren't following the standards. Is that because they don't know the standards are there, or is it because the standards aren't really applicable to what they want to do? Anybody have a view on that?
I think it's not even standards. It's even some aspects of legislation, Andy. Take something very, very simple, such as the provision and use of work commitment regulations in the UK. There are still some big organisations that aren't complying with that. But you go into the public domain, prosecutions database on the government website, and see how many organisations are being prosecuted under Regulation 11, which is the Safeguarding and Machinery Regulation within Pure. And it's scary. And the fines are significant, yet you probably could go into many in one day in any particular area and say, have you done your Pure assessments and have you got documented evidence of that? And probably many of them haven't.
I think as well, when you look at those prosecutions, I'm going to look at some of those, it's 90% of them are where people have ignored their risk assessments and they've ignored the Pure legislation and they've put a magnet where they shouldn't have put a magnet and they've circumvented a guard. Well,
and Ian, you're absolutely right. And actually, where we were talking earlier on, and I know Peter mentioned about over complexity and isn't a fan. I used to open up electrical control panels, obviously supervised in the past, and saw wire links across a safety relay between 13, 14, 23, 24, 30, and the electricians had shorted it out because on the night shift they'd had a problem, easiest way to get the machine up and running. I have never, ever seen that within a safety functional controller because it wouldn't work, because the safety functional controller has enough diagnostic coverage systems and enough technology in it to say, that wire link, mate, you can't work it. I'm shutting the system down. Yeah. So actually, it's making the system safer, but it just is a different technology skill set that's needed to maintain them, in my mind.
Yeah, and this is a problem, the skill set. I've been in the factories where they wanted to digitalize, and you're coming into this massive factory full of machines, hundreds and hundreds of machines there. And I'm saying, okay, I'm supposed to connect to this machine. What does it have, a controller? I said, oh, there is a HMI. I said, that's HMI, that's not a controller. I cannot connect to HMI. It's maybe give me some information, but we cannot open a panel. I said, what do you mean you cannot open the panel? When you are a maintenance engineer here. Oh, yeah, I am a maintenance coordinator. I have to call third-party company to open a panel for you. And that time to saying, hold on a second. And if you cannot open a panel of your own machine, I don't know what's the reason, but how you can actually know what the machines do, how it operates, and what are the safety in it, you cannot even open it. Of course, it can come to the another situations, and I'm going to mention some things which that required from me on one project to connect to SCADA system. And the SCADA system have so many hurdles, licensing hurdles and physical network hurdles to connect to it. When the client said for him, it's impossible to fulfill them. And I came on the side and said, can we open panel? Yes, we can open panel. I opened the panel, and I'm going to say it again. There was a machine which probably was complex as a small nuclear reactor, costing millions. And there was a couple of PLCs and a switch. I said, can I plug on that switch? Well, yeah, of course. I plug in the switch, and within 5 minutes, I had around 10,000 tags from that machine. I know exactly what the machine's doing. And this, if you consider, this was a training center, but this, if something like this is going to happen, and it's not about being able to look and change things. This is just to acquire the knowledge, what actually machine's doing, how it operates. It's all already giving you massive breakage in security and safety. Imagine when you do gain this kind of access to the system, and you don't need to have a virus to plug that. You need to just change a little bit of logic. You need to just change some things which will delay some reactions, which will silence some alarm. That means you affected the system, which on the long term doesn't even show anywhere. Nobody will know, except of probably in 12 months, whole system collapse, melt, crash down. And I think this the approach, how it exists. I know we're talking about it a lot, but it needs to come down into, as you mentioned, David, to education, to people coming into work with that, when I know the safety is the first, and then on top of that, I can build a system which will work. At this moment, the design is opposite. I need this functional system. And then when it's done, I'm going to look what safety I need to apply on it. And if the design would be changed, and when we're going to say first the safety, how to design everything. And I'm not talking only about physical safety, but accessing safety, security, and ability to integrate it, because we're not going to stop progress. And we're not going to have for a very long time machine disconnected in the factories. Because why would we? It's giving us knowledge. It's giving us important. It's giving knowledge to the manufacturer of the machine. And there is always a chicken egg, who's on the data? Question is, all of them, in some way, all of them, because one is producing and owning the machine, the other one, because it's designed the machine, again, separation, which data are important for who, and how should be DNA, should be a document agreement written between them, how they gonna from legal point behave, and you know, you said previously go into third party company and offer machines which is 18% more performance better. Yeah, if you're gonna be able to legally say, yeah, that's not possible because I do have agreement with this company and I need to first offer the improvements for the company where I aggregate the data. Again, it's a contractual, and that's another haywire. That's another mess of law going around it. And if you're going into software world, the law and the mess around the law and all that copyrights, rights around the, it's even more complex than an OT layer. And that's probably for much longer talk and probably even some different type of people, because even I work in IT and with the software for many years, many times I was scratching my head. I just don't understand how small clausula in terms and conditions could clean up a mess which was created by software company on the beginning, or opposite way. You know, it's, you can't blame somebody if you disconnect the safety and then say, oh, I disconnect the safety and I'll blow up, it's your fault. Sorry, no, you should not. You should not, that you were told that to not to do it. And again, the correct documentation is coming from a machine builder. If machine builder say, this is how the machine should be used, this is how you can connect it and integrate it with your system. This is again lacking in many manufacturers, OEM builders, because they don't really, and I wouldn't say care, but you know, when you're selling a machine, this is your process. You get order, you're building, selling it, you ship it, and maybe you got some maintenance contract. But do you want to get involved with IT in that corporation where you ship it and where you sell it? You don't have maybe people for that. And many times people coming to me with the questions, you know, we want to integrate it, but, you know, we don't have IT people. For me, cost of the consultant in IT to integrate it with IT of some customer will be actually triple cost of my own installation. And the customer wouldn't want to pay for it, or it will be very complex and a more expensive exercise. How to break through this? Of course, there are technologies to do it, but again, it's agreement between manufacturer or producer of the machine and consumer or the customer. There has to be always some, sometimes deep legal, sometimes terms and conditions are enough, agreements between them. And then the both can benefit from it. The manufacturer or the producer of the machines can get the data and produce better machines in the future, or can do the predictive maintenance because technology allows that these days. But again, how deeply he should go? Should he really get access to everything? Should he have access to code in the machine while the machine is running in production? Of course, there should be some restrictions. And again, the system should be designed a way where saying, yeah, machine is in a shop floor, unless you have a green from the user, from the customer, you're not accessing it. You can access the data, which could be treated somewhere in a cloud or in private data center, doesn't really matter where, but you're not playing with a machine, which is like you're not playing with a, in a transformer with a life. You have the distance. You, as Ian said, you have the physical distance to mess with it. If you want to break the distance, you don't even need to touch it. It can kill you still. And the same things. You may not touch the code itself, but you can make in a software small adjustments of something that you don't even think it can have an effect. But there is so many dependencies on each other when the whole product can collapse. And that's the power of the software. It can be very flexible, but one small mistake, which is not properly tested before it's put in a production, it can cause collapse of the machine. And maybe kill somebody, of course, but it's a much more complex things to communicate the physical safety and move it into software world and in IT world. It's a long-term way I would say generations on.
A robust validation and verification plan. We always would suggest that you have someone different than the programmer that actually wrote the software to do the checking of the software. So you've got two trains of thought. But that then goes back to what I was saying before around the fourth edition of 13849. Let's really get that functional requirement specification, the safety requirement specification nailed down at the front end. Because unless we've got that nailed down at the front end, we've got nothing to validate against. And that's, again, going back to, I think the technical documentation is there, the assistant and support is there. It's just the application that we need to get right. And I do see people making software changes on PLCs, safety-related PLCs, without due consideration, I would say. And it worries me. But please rest assured that Eddie, Tom, Dick and Harry can't get into that PLC to change the software code. They're all locked down. They all password protected. And they all have some form of cyclic redundancy check, so a CRC element to them. So even through documentation and traceability, you can even put code within your standard part of your software in a lot of controllers that says if the CRC isn't this, then you're not going to run. So the machine won't run if someone makes some changes that's not authorized, without obviously then changing other parts of the code, which then gets more complicated. But it is a challenge. But once again, I think we go back to the different skill set there, you know.
So David, we always still, sorry, think, Ian, David, go last time, and then we must move on.
David, do you think then we should have some kind of dedicated risk assessment and safety level accreditation for the software and its accessibility for or its ability to cause an issue through clandestine methods?
Yeah. that's really challenging, because you know we go from safety relays to configurable controllers to fully blown programmable controllers, and then go into the control systems from the process environment as well, which then takes it to another level with another set of standards behind it as well. My own take on it is that give the people the knowledge to do the right thing. There has to be some education within industry that the people in the position of control and authority have to understand that they need to invest in their people to give them the training and support and knowledge to be able to support these systems, you know, the new systems. They wouldn't put a robot on the shop floor and expect someone that has never worked on a robot before to put that into production. And nor should they do with the programmable controllers. But actually, Ian, I think sometimes engineers are also a little bit underspoken in industry. You know, they should be going to the senior management and saying, I need this, I need that, and I need the other, and I can't do my job without it, and really putting together a good case for doing it. But I say standardization is a little bit, for me, it's in terms of us all working off the same exact common platform, I say I don't want to stifle innovation. I think that's really, really important that we still have the flexibility for people to do what they need to do. But there's a massive skills gap, and you'll see it as well. I mean, even on a configurable controller, you know, you could make a cock up and make something work in the complete opposite way that you thought it was going to work.
Yeah. And it would pass the problem is
if you do have a regulations like IEC 62443, you can say, yeah, the controller or the software platform, they all fulfilling. But I've been assessing platform against this. And you know what is the most common answer for it? Yes, by design. You have to design it within the system. It is capable of doing it all, but is not tick box exercise. It's not something which is automatically set. Then if somebody's saying I need the regulation 2-3-3, I can say, yeah, there you go, controller, there you go, software. It's fulfilling it. It's not, because nobody's gonna design it that way, because that means he has to very narrow specify and create the complex rules within the system. And that means the system become inflexible to be applicable somewhere else. And if that's become inflexible to apply to be applied somewhere else, you spend a lot of money and investments to develop the system, which is actually sellable to very narrow space. And that's why all of them, they are capable of doing, but it's then on engineers when they're designing the process, then they're designing the applications, they're designing the logics within the system, when they actually apply these rules. Then on the end, we're gonna end up with the people behind that. And there was a question why they don't doing it many times. One thing is lack of knowledge. The other thing is lack of resources. If you consider how much the engineering world actually shrinking, because there is not so many young people which wants to go to do complicated engineering. And to be honest, I've seen with my own kids, they are users of technology and they are fantastic. Whatever put into their hands, they can use it within a couple of minutes. But to design new things, that's completely different story. And to go down to the engineering, like somebody was asking, actually, is there actually a company which creating a program in an assembler? And what is assembler? I was shocked. Like, you don't know what is an assembler and you programming computer. Then go there. It's actually the first and the closest language how to communicate with your hardware, with your CPU. And if you don't know what is assembler and you're using Visual C or you're using some different high advanced programming language, you actually not interested on all that rules which applies on the machine level, on the CPU level, on the processor level. You just utilizing somebody's knowledge, which was built by teams, by thousand and thousand people to create one software, which of course that making your life easier. And from user point, it's put the code in there. It's not that difficult as it was 20 years ago, but it does not let you to fully understand what's happening underneath it. And I think the understanding is getting worse and worse these days because there is lack of engineers on the bottom layer. On a design of bottom layers. And if it's that safety, security, or any systems out there, IT or OT, there is less and less engineers to be born.
Yes, very, very true, Peter. I totally identify with what you said there. We always promote these sessions as similar to a jazz composition where what happens between the fixed points is relatively unknown. And we have, in fact, managed to go an hour and 10 minutes on pretty much the first presentation, although everyone's chipped in and probably said a great deal of what they wanted to say anyway.
Talking Industry, topical debate from the world of engineering, automation and manufacturing. Brought to you by DFA Media Group. This episode is sponsored by Drives and Controls, the number one event for automation, power transmission and motion control. Taking place the 5th and the 6th of June 2024 at the NEC Birmingham, in association with Smart Manufacturing and Engineering Week. Register now at www.drives-expo.com.